Contracting officers have a lot of authority when it comes to deciding who wins federal contracts, but they don't have unlimited discretion, and that's what the CO who awarded a deal to USIS found out. In sustaining a protest, the Government Accountability Office says the contracting officer should have paid more attention to allegations of fraud against that company. With more on this case in this week's Legal Loop, we turn to procurement attorney Joe Petrillo. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so review this case for us. This is a pretty recent one.
Yeah, this is a bid protest coming out just at the end of October. It involves a procurement by Homeland Security of office support services, field office support services for the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And the Immigration Service wanted to have a support contractor, and the two finalists were FCI Federal and USIS. Their proposals were considered approximately equal, so USIS with a lower price got the award. Price was about just over $200 million. The losing bidder, FCI, protested, and they said that USIS had very recently, but before award, been sued by the Justice Department under the False Claims Act. The allegations were that in contracts that USIS had for background investigations, they pushed the investigations through the system without performing a quality review that they were supposed to be doing under the contract.
Yeah, that was the stuffing allegation, I think was the word they used.
Yeah, they were flushing or dumping. Nasty word. So anyway, they have this allegation out there. They've got an actual case filed against them by the Justice Department, and Homeland Security goes ahead and makes an award of this contract. Losing bidder protests and say, wait a minute, you didn't look at this factor.
But on the other hand, could the CO have said, well, they're not debarred or suspended, so they must be in good graces?
Well, that's what the CO sort of thought. She thought providing a non-responsibility determination under these circumstances would be like debarment or suspension. And the rules are that it is not. In fact, what the CO has to determine is that a company affirmatively has responsibility. You don't. The default position is that the company is not responsible. So the CO has to make an affirmative determination, and in doing that, the CO has to consider relevant information. The contracting officer admitted she'd heard through news reports that USIS had this case filed against it, but she didn't do any investigation. Apparently got only very vague information about the case, and it wasn't clear that she really thought she could determine USIS to be non-responsible, even if there was credible information that it had done something improper.
But the GAO disagreed and said that she could have found them not responsible.
Well, yeah,
is what happened.
They said this, non-responsibility determination is different from debarment and suspension. You're not innocent until proven guilty for non-responsibility. You have to show a satisfactory record of integrity and business ethics. And it is true that there's a lot of discretion in making that determination. And GAO usually doesn't reverse contracting officers' determinations. But here they found that the contracting officer hadn't really considered these very serious allegations. And therefore, they sent it back to the contracting officer to relook at that in light of the case that had been filed.
Because in the bid evaluation, if you look at the side-by-side evaluations of the two companies, FCI Federal and USIS, in terms of management capability, the USIS side got all outstandings, whereas the FCI Federal got mostly goods. So USIS was deemed to be the better management company. So that apparently didn't take into account what had happened in the past.
Well, yeah. I mean, the evaluation, when it went up to higher authority, they basically thought the two companies were essentially equal. But in spite of the higher grades that USIS had gotten in some of the categories, the responsibility applies no matter what your grade is on the technical proposal, and that's something that has to be met. One of the things that I find odd about this case is making a non-responsibility determination. The contracting officer maybe has some problem thinking about how to deal with these allegations, but why wasn't that taken into account in the past performance evaluation? It seems to me that that's a much easier place to address these kinds of allegations that haven't necessarily been resolved in a court of law. Why not go to the agencies that were affected and find out what their past performance evaluation was on this contract? That seems to me to make a lot of sense, and it merited no more than a footnote in the opinion.
But was the work that USIS retained to do by ICE the same as it was called out on for fraud?
There were some differences, but it's clear that USIS had referred to its background investigation work in its past performance part of its proposal.
So they brought it up, so therefore it was on the table.
They had brought it up, and there was also an issue about the fact that there was a different legal entity involved in the allegations and in the in bidding this contract, but the record also showed that that was not a substantive difference. The company was managed as an integrated whole.
And so now, what happens? Does this decision give the contract to FCI, and the agency has to pay the other $19 million in price, or do they have to reevaluate?
They have to reevaluate the issue of non-responsibility, of responsibility rather, and of past performance. And those two things need to be looked at again, and then we'll see who wins the contract after that reevaluation.
So the CO could reward it to USIS. Is there some FAR clause that by which she can, justify that decision?
Well, you should have to take into account the allegations, and USIS would presumably have an opportunity to explain what they had done to remedy the situation. Or
I think they fired most of the executives that were involved in those allegations.
If that's the case, then they would certainly make that representation to DHS and say that the problem has been fixed, so we can go forward.
We're speaking with procurement attorney Joe Petrillo of Washington, of his own law firm, Petrillo and Powell. And I want to switch gears for a minute because there is a new final rule out from the FAR Council on something called Uniform Procurement Identification. This rule has been pending now for some time. It's now final. We should probably know what it does and what its purpose is.
Sure. This creates a uniform numbering system for contracts and other contractual instruments, so like solicitations, throughout the federal government. And it basically adopts the kind of system, numbering system you have in DOD, where the first six positions in the number are an identification of the agency or office granting the contract or issuing the instrument. The next two digits are the last two digits of the fiscal year in which the event took place. And then there's a letter code that tells you what kind of instrument it is. A C is a contract, a D is an indefinite quantity contract, a B is an invitation for bids, an R is a request for proposals, etc. And so you can tell immediately what it is from that letter code. And then there are four digits, which is a sequential numbering system to distinguish the different instruments within that category.
Interestingly, they put in a two-digit date code, so I guess it's only good till 2099.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to revisit the issue back then, Tom. Let's talk about it when that happens.
So the onus for establishing these numbers and putting them on contracts and getting the systems to who does all of this?
These are done by individual agencies, and the advantage of having uniformity, of course, is that it makes it easier to report these things and to accumulate data in various data systems where centralized reporting is done for procurements. And you sort of wonder why this wasn't done a long time ago. I mean, the FAR was adopted in 1984 to try to bring some consistency to federal procurements, and here we are 30 years later, and we're just getting around to the numbering system.
Yeah, because you look at some of the comments that they're analyzing. One agency says the projected cost of this rule to the agency would be $4.1 million for labor and systems and an additional $80,000 for training. So we multiply that across all the agencies, and you've got a pretty expensive rule.
Yeah, it probably would have been cheaper to have done this a long time ago, but you know, at least we now have consistency, and you know, it's easy to figure out what it is you're looking at from the start.
All right. Joseph Petrillo is a procurement attorney with the law firm of Petrillo and Powell of Washington. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.